Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Welcome to the Saturday Slammin' Jam, hosted by Andrew Schlecht, with Alex Spears.
How about we can just watch basketball?
That's a man's jam!
I like that idea.
Live from Oklahoma.
Click, click.
With questions and participants from all around the world.
Anthony Edwards!
Put that on a poster!
Whether you're flipping your flapjacks, tending to your yard, or just sipping your coffee, get ready, sit back, relax. It's the Saturday Slammin' Jam.
Fact is, I missed this shot. I'll walk away. I'm still a chump.
Here's Andrew.
Welcome to the Saturday Slammin' Jam. I'm your host, Andrew Schlecht. Go to theathletic.com. You can get The Athletic right now for $1 a month for 6 months. It's practically free. You should go do that right now. Before we get to Alex, it is our one-year anniversary of the Saturday Slammin' Jam podcast. Yes, it is. First of all, thank you to Jade Hoy for letting us do this show. Thank you to all of you guys for listening. It's been so fun, something that I have really loved. And I'm very thankful to be able to do this show. So, hey, congratulations, Al.
Why are we not doing a one-year extravaganza blowout fest?
That's what this is. You just didn't know.
Oh. I feel like I would have prepared.
Oh, man, Al. Well, Al, tell us what happened in the NBA this week.
Well, Andrew, it was All-Star Weekend this past week, but to be honest, I feel like you've probably already heard entirely too much analysis of it at this point, so why bother recapping it? You don't need another breakdown of the Clorox Skills Challenge, do you?
I do not, actually.
Okay.
No, thank you.
So, instead, let's just focus real quickly on some of the games that happened on Thursday night, because after a week of NBA Twitter without actual games, it was very, very nice to have basketball back. Now, the marquee game of the night was the Memphis Grizzlies versus the Minnesota Timberwolves. The Wolves, behind D'Angelo Russell's 23 fourth quarter points, beat the Grizz at the Target Center, 119 to 114. Can the Wolves catch the Nuggets for the sixth seed? Probably not. Probably not at all. But they are only 2.5 games back and have a 2.5 game lead on the eighth seed, so they feel pretty safe regardless. Elsewhere in the league, the Bulls continued their hot streak, winning their sixth in a row with a 112-108 victory over the Hawks. DeMar DeRozan scored 37 points in the game while shooting 71%. The 37 points is notable, though, because if you are a betting person, DeRozan has now gone over his points prop in 11 straight games. Vegas can't figure him out. They can't put it high enough, Andrew. He keeps beating it. In other news, Steve Nash called the Boston Celtics, quote, far and away the best defense of 2022, which sounds like a compliment, but is also just a fact at this point. In 2022, the gap between the Celtics defense and the second-ranked defense, which is the Dallas Mavericks, is about as big as the gap between the Mavericks and the ninth-ranked defense, which happens to be the Oklahoma City Thunder. The Celtics went out and demolished the starless Nets on Thursday, 129-106, which, combined with a Cavaliers loss to the Detroit Pistons, means that the Celtics are now only one game out of the fifth seed. Pretty good for a team that was 17-19 and the ninth seed on January 1st. Overall, a great first night of basketball after the All-Star break.
It was great. And something that I've been kind of looking toward is, who are our conference finals contenders here? Because it's pretty crowded. And I wanted to look back at the history of the conference finals over the last 10 years to see if we could learn anything about these teams. And so I just took some basic stats. I just took offensive rating, defensive rating, and net rating, and just wanted to see what does that look like over the past 10 years. So over the past decade, the average net rating for a conference finalist is fourth. Makes sense. You got to be a good team to make the conference finals. Actually, one of the four best teams. So I thought that was kind of interesting. The offensive rating average is sixth for a conference finalist, and the defensive rating is eighth. So let's look at some outliers here. Five teams had a below average offense and still made the conference finals. It's the 2012 Celtics, who were 24th in offense, but they had the second rated defense. It's the 2013 Pacers, who had the 19th rated offense, but the first rated defense. It's the 2013 Grizzlies that had the 18th ranked offense, but the second rated defense. The Pacers, again, in 2014 were 21st in offense, but first in defense. And then the 2018 Celtics were 18th in offense, but second in defense. So you notice a trend here, Al.
Sounds like the Jazz argument, if the Jazz had a top two defense.
Well, slow down. I'm gonna talk about teams to consider at the end
of this. Okay.
So if you're going to be an outlierly bad offensive team, you have to have a great defense, is what the past decade has shown us.
Like
you
elite have to be defense.
One of elite. It's a little different with the offensive teams that are, or with the teams that are bad on defense. So there are actually eight teams that had below average defenses that made the conference finals. It's the 2021 Hawks, were ranked 18th in defense, only 9th in offense. So, and I think that we can look at that one and say it's kind of an outlier because of the way the Sixers played and whatnot. The 2020 Nuggets were 16th in defense, 5th in offense. The 2019 Blazers were 16th in defense and 3rd in offense. Now, none of those teams made the finals. Now we have this chunk of LeBron James Cavs teams
I was gonna say.
That are just so fascinating because the 2015, 2017, and 2018 Cavs all had below average defenses, but not only below averages, two of them had bottom 10 defenses. The 2018 Cavs were the 29th ranked defense going into the playoffs. They were the 5th rated offense. So like a good offense, but not like the greatest offense. The 2017 Cavs were 21st in defense and 7th in offense. And then the 2015 Cavs were 18th in defense and 4th in offense. I kind of put this in this its own little box of LeBron James. Still do great things in the playoffs. This is not something that you can apply to your team today. And I don't know that the Lakers can apply this to their team today because they still have LeBron James, because they don't have the other piece there, and they don't have a younger LeBron James. And then the 2011 Thunder were 15th in defense and 6th in offense. So if you have the worst defense, like bottom of the barrel defense, it's really tough to win. But it's just interesting that there were more teams that were at the bottom in defense and still made the conference finals.
Which kind of makes sense because even going, I don't know how, you only went back a decade, but I wonder with those old Lakers teams, because those Lakers teams, you know, when I was growing up, those were the first teams where people would talk about them as like the switch the flip or flip the switch team.
Switch the flip.
Yeah. And the thing that they would be flipping would be their defense, because these guys are like so talented offensively, they're going to be scoring most nights. But the defense is the thing that can kind of, you let go of it during the regular season when you are a veteran team that doesn't really care and just wants to get to the playoffs.
Yeah, the 2001 Lakers were rated, 22nd in defense.
Okay, makes sense.
So, yeah, there was a switch there. And it's, I mean, and we all know that, you know, making the finals is all about having stars. Like, that's really what, you know, the league tells us. But I wanted to bring just to light maybe some teams that we don't consider like legit conference finals contenders and talk about like who really are the conference finals contenders. I think like Phoenix, who's third in offense, third in defense, first in net. Obviously, that's a conference finals contender. Golden State, second in net, ninth in offense, first in defense, obviously. The Milwaukee Bucks, who are ninth in net rating, sixth in offense, 12th in defense, is another team that we consider. The Nets, and I don't really know what to do with the Nets because they don't have the profile of a team that makes the conference finals at all. Like in the past decade, there's not been a team with this profile. Like we even talked about the Cavs, who were 29th in defense. They're fifth in offense. The Nets have the profile of just like a kind of a mediocre team. And it's obvious why, because their guys haven't played. But they're 17th in net rating, 20th in defense, 13th in offense. And they may end up being like the outlier team of the past decade.
Well, I was going to say, you could have stopped it like they don't have a profile of a team. Like they're, yeah. They're just like not a team yet. Like we just haven't seen
it. No, that's exactly right. Yeah, the lowest net rating of any team to make the conference finals in the past decade is 14th, which is that 2018 Cavs were 14th in net rating. And then we have 11th for the 2012 Celtics and 11th for the 2021 Hawks. And that's the lowest net rating in the past 10 years. So, you know, the Bucks. You know, it wouldn't, you know, I know the Bucks have disappointed recently, but there's been a lot of teams to have that profile and still make the conference finals. And once you get to the conference finals, like we know that anything can happen. And then Philly is also interesting. Philly's 12th in net rating, 11th in defense, 14th in offense. That's not quite the profile of a team that makes the conference finals either. And we're not at the end of the season yet. We still have 20 plus games for most of these teams. So there's time for all of this to change. But I thought that was interesting. So are there any teams that I should be considering? I've got Phoenix, Golden State, Bucks, Nets, Philly. Any other teams that you're like, oh, they should be, they are already thought of as a conference finalist contender?
I think the team is the Boston Celtics because based on that first profile that you discussed where you have this hyper elite defense and then you don't really care what the offense is, like, that's kind of the Boston Celtics. Like what we just mentioned, that they've been far and away the best defense in 2022. Even overall for the season, they're second. So they're already in that elite category of defenses.
I guess my question is, are people do you think that people are discussing them as a conference finalist contender?
I think today? It's happening right now. Like the tide is turning now.
So they're one of the teams. I think the Miami Heat are a team that is not talked about enough. They're fifth in net rating, eighth in offense, sixth in defense. Like, absolutely. That's a team that should be talked about. And that's where the East is kind of getting kind of crazy. Because even though Philly and the Nets, like, no one would be shocked if they made it, right? No one.
No.
And it's, like, now we're at five teams. The Bucks, the Nets, Philly, Boston, Miami. And we haven't even discussed Chicago. Where it would almost be a disappointment at this point for any of those teams to not make it. And newsflash, there's only two that make it. So the East playoffs is going to be kind of what the West has been over the past decade, where like so many teams have the profile of a conference finalist, but only two can get there.
And that's one of the reasons why I do think it's really important for Chicago to hold on to that number one seed. Because I do have those questions about them in the playoffs. But and obviously they could get Brooklyn as the eighth seed, but assuming they don't get Brooklyn and they just get another team, whether it's Charlotte or whoever, I would feel much better about them moving forward in the playoffs because we haven't seen this team in the playoffs yet. So to have a first round series where you feel confident in the Bulls and then they can move into the second round, as opposed to them dropping down and having to face one of these other Eastern Conference teams that very well could make it to the conference finals, I think that's big for them more than some of these other teams. I think it matters more for them.
I'd like to consider the Cavs as another one of those teams because they are 7th in net rating, 4th in defense, and 19th in offense. That kind of profile as one of those teams that doesn't have a good offense, but their defense is elite. But it's also been a long time since one of those teams has actually made it. Like, offense really, really matters today. So I think it's going to be tough, especially with the teams that they have to play in the playoffs. I don't think I can truly consider them a team that can get there. The worst offense since 2018 was the 2018 Celtics were 18th in offense in the league. And then you have to go all the way back to 2013 to find a team that had a below average offense. So it's just, it is much harder to get there if you have a below average offense like the Cleveland Cavaliers have right now. However, I'd like to make sure that we consider these two teams in the Western Conference because, one, no one's really talking about the West. It's a lot more, it's not as interesting. It's a little bit more boring. But I think that the Utah Jazz and the Memphis Grizzlies should be considered like legit contenders to get to the Western Conference Finals. The Utah Jazz are first in offense, 10th in defense, and 3rd in net rating. And the Grizzlies are 6th in net rating, 5th in offense, 9th in defense. And I know the Grizzlies are young. They're kind of an upstart team. They're a real team. And like, don't be surprised if we get to May and it's like, oh, the Memphis Grizzlies are playing the Suns in the conference finals. Like, I think they are legitimately a team that could get there.
Well, for my most interesting thing this week, I actually wanted to talk, go a little bit deeper dive on one of the teams you brought up as a contender, and it's probably the most obvious one. But first, I want to just mention that it's post-All-Star week, which means that it's been a difficult week for podcasters. We don't know what the hell to talk about, Andrew, with no games. and so a popular segment has been big questions for the rest of the season, you know? Big questions to ask about. And I've listened to a few of these, and it made me realize that there's one team that has basically had zero big picture questions to talk about this season until now, and that's the Phoenix Suns. The Suns are the best team in the league, 49-10. Everybody agrees they're great, but in a big picture sense, there's not a ton of questions. At least compared to teams like Brooklyn, how will Ben Simmons play? Philly, how will Embiid and Harden mesh? Milwaukee, what's up with Brooke Lopez, and is their defense okay? Golden State, is Draymond going to be healthy? On and on and on. It's not like that with the Suns, outside of obvious questions like, what the hell is wrong with Robert Sarver? But outside of him, the Suns have really answered all of their big picture questions, which, if the media hasn't talked about this team enough, that's probably the reason why. I think we all get and respect the Suns. They made some moves going back to last summer to shore up what few weaknesses they did have, and now it's largely a waiting game until the playoffs. Or is it? Because now that Chris Paul is injured, out 6 to 8 weeks with a fractured thumb, the Suns all of a sudden have a ton of intriguing questions that make their stretch run to the playoffs much more interesting. So I wanted to go through a few questions about the post-All-Star Suns without Chris Paul. Are you ready, Andrew?
Let's do it.
Let's start off with the least interesting question. Great place to start. It's the thing that's going to interest you the least, which is the Coach of the Year race. Now, listen up.
Yeah.
Last year, Tom Thibodeau, who we discussed last week, he won the award, only beat Monty Williams by 11 total points. Now, if a person spent the time to come up with a Coach of the Year argument last year in favor of Tibbs over Monty, one common thing you would hear was, well, this Suns success is as much about CP3 as anyone else. You know, CP3 is a coach on the floor, Andrew. That's two coaches. And I think that sentiment has died down a little after seeing Monty lead the Suns to the finals with an often injured Chris Paul. So this should be his year, right? The problem is, there is an incredibly deep roster of valid options this year. You got Billy Donovan, Eric Spoelstra, Bickerstaff, Taylor Jenkins. So many worthy candidates, and you could imagine that same CP3 argument coming back as people try to split hairs over who to choose. Well, guess what, Andrew? You can't do it anymore, because now we get an extended look at Monty coaching this Suns team without Chris Paul on the court. And personally, I think that by the end of this, Monty will be the clear and obvious choice once this team ends up with the best overall record, despite not having Chris Paul most, if not all, of this stretch run. So that's
And plus they have such a big lead that it's going to be really tough for anybody to catch. Okay.
So that's the first post All-Star Suns question. Again, not the most exciting stuff. It's Coach of the Year. Who really cares? But we had to start somewhere. All right. Second question for the post All-Star Suns comes to us from the 4-Point Play on Twitter. The 4-Point Play is a great Phoenix Suns newsletter on Substack. If you're a Suns fan, even if you're not, just Google the 4-Point Play. It pops right up. Some great deep dives on this team. David, who runs the 4-Point Play, tweeted out after the CP3 injury, whether you think he's deserved it already or not, the next 6 weeks is undoubtedly how DeAndre Ayton removes the question mark of, is he a max guy? And it's a good point, because honestly, the DeAndre Ayton question has kind of faded into the background for me this season. Less than a year ago, we were all watching Ayton put up some of the most efficient playoff numbers we had seen. And at the end of that, even though the Suns lost, it felt like the general consensus was, this is a max guy. We all agreed on it. But then the Suns didn't offer him a max extension, only the second top overall pick since 2008 to not get that extension. And then he missed 21 of the Suns' first 59 games. And frankly, if you were hearing about a Suns center on an NBA podcast in the last couple months, it was probably someone talking about Bismack Biyombo. But that's not to say Ayton's been bad this year. The 4-Point Play had a great newsletter about Ayton in early January, breaking down his dominance in the paint on the offensive end and his development of a potential go-to move, the hook shot. Now, I remember, and you remember, Andrew, in the lead-up to the 2016 draft, Ayton was kind of pitched as this big who one day was going to be able to score from everywhere on the court. Like, he's going to be able to shoot threes eventually. He's going to be able in the mid-range. That hasn't really happened. He is predominantly a paint scorer, but that's okay because Ayton is so good there, and as a result, he's shooting a career-high 63% from the field. So while his offensive game may be limited compared to that idealized version of him that was talked about in 2016, it all kind of works because he's surrounded by a roster that complements him so well. As David describes in his newsletter, at full health, you have Booker hitting over 40% on pull-up threes, Chris Paul is the master of the mid-range, Ayton dominating the paint, these three surrounded by catch-and-shoot guys. It's a roster that fits so beautifully together and is a big argument in their favor when we get to the playoffs because they do so many things well. They can hurt you efficiently from everywhere. But now Chris Paul is out. And he has played a fundamental role in Ayton's development these past two seasons. And so for the next few weeks, we get to see how far DeAndre Ayton has come without CP3. And honestly, regardless of what happens, I still expect that he will get a max offer this summer from somebody. At the same time, and it's only one game, but the first game post-CP3 was set up perfectly for Ayton. A matchup against an Oklahoma City team that is both tanking and also doesn't really have anyone who should be able to stop Ayton. And what did Ayton do? Well, we did see a hook shot, but he only took five shots in 30 minutes. Yeah. 6 points, 8 rebounds, 5 turnovers. The Suns won big, so it ultimately didn't matter, but it was just a very strange game for a guy that going in you would have expected would dominate because he has all the physical tools and skills to do so in a perfect matchup, and yet it didn't happen.
I was not totally discouraged by it, though, because the Thunder, and I saw this game up close and personal last night here in Oklahoma City, the Thunder shut the paint down on defense. That's what they do. They're sending somebody else. It's if it's Derek Favors, it's not Derek Favors one-on-one. Like, there was not a lot of Derek Favors one-on-one. It's Darius Bazley's being sent over. Like, someone is always being sent over. The Thunder pack the paint because they don't have any bigs. The Thunder are under no impression that they can shut a big man down with anybody on their roster. Right. So they use lots of guys. And that's what killed the Thunder last night. And I'm actually a little bit more encouraged by it because he's continuing to play within the flow of the offense and letting the ball fly around. And that's how they beat the Thunder, was that ultimately they made enough threes, they let the ball fly around. And Ayton is not sitting there in the post calling for stuff. Like, he's playing defense, he's running the court hard. He's doing all the things that you really want him to do come playoff time. Because if Ayton's like sitting in the post on Favors and has his arm up the whole time and like is getting discouraged, like Christian Wood running up and down the court, I think people would be like, what is this guy doing? Like, this is not his role. He shut down the paint a lot. He gave Shai Gilgeous-Alexander huge fits in the first half. So I was actually still kind of encouraged by his performance last night up close, just seeing the strategy that OKC throws at him. Like, the touches weren't there. The post wasn't there, and he didn't seem to mind. He let the ball just flow.
I could see, first of all, I think that's a very good, like, nuanced opinion on what that game was, because I still come away, like, we're talking about him as a max guy. It's not like we're asking a question, like, is this a guy that can fit into a team long term? Like, obviously, he's already proven that to me. Like, my question with him is, can he make that next step where, a team's shutting down the paint and he's still dominating?
I don't think he's that guy. I think he's proven that he's not that. However, it doesn't take it. I don't think that. I think his market value is going to be what his market value is.
It is.
That somebody would pay him the max this summer. So you have to pay him what the market value is, or you just don't have him.
I agree. I mean, that's why I said, like, I think he's getting a max no matter what. This is more of a question, like, is he a quote-unquote max guy? Like, the idea of a max guy versus what the numbers in his contract say.
I don't think he's the traditional, like, he's not, at least as of today, because he's still super young. Like, he's not the Jokic, Embiid, max level big. And there may come, if and when they max him out, there may come a point in 3 years where they're like, yeah, that eight money is a bit too much. You know, I could see that happening. But he does fill the role with his current team so well that at this, you know, for these next 3 years or 2 years, like, you just don't really care.
But if they didn't care, they would have extended him. So they obviously do care. And if he doesn't consistently step up over this next stretch without CP3, how does that affect their thinking this summer? Like, they've already shown they're hesitant to commit to him long term.
Yeah. I mean, I just have a hard time seeing them let him go to restricted free agency, sign a contract with, let's say, like Charlotte would be like an ideal place for him.
Yeah.
If he somehow was able, they were able to clear the decks and get him in there. Like, I don't know. I just can't imagine they would not match.
I just cannot imagine they would not match. At the same time, this Ayton question is just another reason why this post-All-Star Suns team is so interesting to me.
That is a very interesting
because it is an opportunity
portion.
CP3 is not there. Somebody's going to be stepping up offensively.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't it be the guy you were about to pay a max to? Okay. All right. Finally, last question for the post All-Star Suns. It's kind of a question that ties all this together. We've talked about Monty without CP3, Ayton without CP3. What about the Suns' future as a franchise without CP3? I don't know how much this sentiment still exists. But the idea that as soon as Chris Paul leaves this team, whenever that happens, the Suns are going to fall apart or revert back to being a dysfunctional franchise. That once you remove the Band-Aid that is Chris Paul, Robert Sarver will rise up from the depths of basketball hell to reclaim his role as franchise destroyer. I think I once believed this, but after their playoff run, I became convinced that the underlying infrastructure in Phoenix, ignoring Sarver, is really, really good. But in case you still feel that way, well, here's a free test run. 6 weeks without Chris Paul. We have not seen this Suns team without Chris Paul for more than two games since the bubble run when they won eight in a row. Last year, CP3 only missed two games in the regular season, one of them the final game when they just sat their stars. He missed the two in the playoffs that we remember. This year, he missed zero games before his injury. Like I said, I don't believe the Chris Paul is everything for Phoenix argument, but to be fair, we really have not seen them without him for any extended period of time since the bubble, which was its own weird thing. So now they get this chance to prove it to all of us. And in addition to the Ayton question, we're going to see some point Booker. We'll get to see how far Mikal Bridges' offensive game has come. And as a bonus, there's some very interesting stakes here, Andrew, because the Suns are currently 6.5 games up on the Warriors, the second best team. Phoenix has the 11th easiest remaining schedule according to Tankathon. Let's just say, for fun, they continue their great play and end the season with at least a 7-game gap between them and the second-best team. That is not normal. In fact, in the last two decades, there have only been two teams that ended the season with a 7-game gap between them and the second-best team, 67-win Warriors, who won the title, and the 2008 Celtics, who won the title. If Phoenix, without Chris Paul, can maintain that lead over Golden State and squeak out that extra half game, we're talking about a sort of dominance in the standings that we just do not see all that often in the NBA. So all this is to say, maybe you weren't interested in the Suns previously. You said to yourself, yeah, they're a great team. I'll see them in the playoffs. I know who they are. You talk like that. But all of a sudden, because of Chris Paul's absence, I think this team has become very interesting in this final stretch before the playoffs. Is Monty coach of the year? Is Ayton a max guy? Is Mikal Bridges a true third option on offense, which honestly deserves its own section, but I ran out of time. Sure. Can they do all this without Chris Paul? I am intrigued, Andrew.
Well, Al, we're going to talk about another Western Conference team right after this quick break. It's the Denver Nuggets.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right, Andrew, it is time once again for the Wheel of Fandom, where each week we spin a digital wheel. It lands on a random NBA team, and we become fans of that team for the next week. This past week, the Wheel of Fandom landed on the Denver Nuggets. The Nuggets went into the All-Star break 6th in the West, led by their star and MVP candidate, Nikola Jokic. When asked whether it was hard to play in the All-Star game, Jokic said that it was, and quote, "I don't know what to do." Despite that, Jokic put up a 10-9-8 in the exhibition before getting back to what he does know how to do, which is putting up wild stat lines like the 25-12-9 with 4 steals, 2 threes, and a block he put up in Thursday's win against the Kings. Andrew, if our favorite team is the Nuggets, who is our guest?
We've got Matt Moore, who's a co-host of the Locked On Nuggets podcast and a writer and podcaster at the Action Network. Matt, what's up?
Hey, man. How's it going? How are y'all?
Doing good.
Good. Thanks for joining, man. As anyone who follows you on Twitter knows, one of your favorite topics is the MVP race, which this year has been mostly focused on Embiid versus Jokic. Having waded deep into the MVP arguments, what do you think is the single most compelling argument for Nikola Jokic's MVP candidacy?
The Nuggets are elite when he's on the floor, and that's entirely because of him. It's, if you look at it from any sort of neutral perspective, that what he does in terms of running the offense, how he runs it, his production when factoring in assists, the performance on all those levels, especially when you consider the fact that this has been his best defensive season. He's got 3 game-saving blocks this season, which is wild. He's played better defense and been more active than he ever has been. He's no longer a defensive liability. I would say he's a defensive strength this season. Embiid's a better defender, but Jokic has raised himself enough to where that argument of, but the defense isn't necessarily as compelling as it used to be. By any sort of look, we could throw out all the acronym metrics that you want. I don't know how compelling those are to a lot of folks. The gap, if you think that data matters, is insane. But the one thing is mostly that when he's on the court, they beat opponents by 10 points per 100 possessions. 10 points per 100 possessions, they beat their opponent. The Nuggets are better when Jokic is on the floor than Embiid, than the Sixers are when Embiid's on the floor.
Mm-hmm. One thing that you often hear smart people say when they talk about Jokic is that he's been even better this season than he was during his MVP season last year. What specifically have you seen this year that separates him? Is it the defense or is there something else?
I think the defense is part of it. I think he continues to get better at control of the game, which is wild because last year he was so good at it. He shapes the game in a way that I don't know that anybody outside of maybe LeBron, Chris Paul, like you got to be at that level to shape the game the way that he does in terms of, if the defense does this, he punishes it with this. If the defense does the other thing, he's able to hurt it that way. There's no real way to contain him. If you play him straight up, he's one of the most efficient scorers in the league. If you double team him, he's going to tear you apart like you're blitzing Patrick Mahomes. Like, there's just simply no counter for him. And in that regard, like, I think that's been his biggest improvement year over year. Even though he was elite at this last year, his control of the game is higher than it's ever been.
So his supporting cast has been part of the MVP argument for some who want to emphasize that Jokic is doing all this with an average or below average roster. That may be unfair, though, to some of his teammates. So for those who aren't watching the Nuggets every night, who is a guy or two on this team you feel like is having an awesome year but is getting lost in the bigger story of this Nuggets team?
Aaron Gordon's been phenomenal. Aaron Gordon's been so good. He's played at a really high level defensively. He guards the toughest perimeter assignment almost every single night. His efficiency has been really good. He has worked very hard since he got to Denver not to be the guy he was in Orlando that just tried to do too much. He's tried to not do too much. And this season, as he's gotten more comfortable with Jokic, he's built a chemistry. He's a really smart cutter, and he's a really smart player in terms of the shots that he chooses. Gordon's been really terrific, even though his box score metrics, his averages, aren't going to jump off the page. His contributions, I think, to winning have been huge. The other player I would really single out is Austin Rivers. For a guy that was out of the league and was just happy to have a job. He's been really crucial for them, for providing them with an NBA guard that can run the offense, hit threes, play defense. Rivers has been surprisingly good for them when they're so shorthanded without both Jamal Murray and PJ Dozier, who also runs points sometimes.
Yeah, he did really well against Fox last night.
Yeah, he did. Speaking of somebody else who was out of the league, Shams reported that Denver will be signing DeMarcus Cousins to a deal for the rest of the season. While he's obviously not the guy that he used to be, do you think that Boogie has finally found a situation that makes sense for him at this stage of his career?
I think so. It's been interesting to hear the comments, because whenever Boogie gets signed, I'm always concerned about, it's not necessarily Cousins' play. And like, look, the Achilles has taken a lot away from him. That's what happens to most NBA players if you're not Kevin Durant. And especially if you're a big man, I think it's tough. But I'm always worried about the locker room stuff. Like, how are you going to deal with Boogie's personality? Because he's a huge pain in the ass. Like, that's just like who he is. He's just a huge pain in the ass. And so I was worried about that. But the Nuggets comments have been really positive about him. They've said that they've liked having him around on the team. They think he brings the right energy. And honestly, they just needed any NBA level center on that second unit, because it was a massive oversight for them not signing one in the offseason. And he's been what they've needed.
So, two obviously big questions for the rest of the season are about Jamal Murray and Michael Porter Jr. For anyone who's not been keeping abreast of the situation, what are the most recent updates on those two guys and their road back?
No updates. That's the most recent update, is no updates. I was expecting some sort of update over All-Star break regarding Murray, you know, possibly starting contact, you know, 3-on-3, 5-on-5, something, practicing, something.
Yeah.
Nothing. Complete silence. Murray was on track for a February return back in January, and then he entered health and safety protocols and couldn't work out for 10 days. And that seems to have set him back to a degree. There's been no setback, to my knowledge, from the people I've talked to. There's been no setback in regards to the actual knee. Now, he has said that after he works out, he still had knee swelling, and this was a couple of weeks ago. So it looks like he's further back than maybe he's done everything that he needed to in order to get back on the court, but the recovery just hasn't gone the way that the Nuggets would have hoped. I think that there is not a substantial, but a slight concern at this point that Murray won't return this season. If he does return, it's going to be closer to the middle of March, I think, at this point, given the timelines. MPJ, honestly, MPJ may be ahead of Murray in some aspects.
Really?
He's felt way better. The surgery almost immediately alleviated his discomfort in a way that was just apparent to anybody who was around him. He's looked awesome in shoot-arounds. He's looked awesome in all of his drills. The thing with MPJ is that, unlike Murray, there's a higher level of concern for re-injury. And so from that perspective, there's still like a lot of concern, I think, from the Nuggets of, we don't want to rush this with MPJ, given what we've committed to him salary-wise. So I think MPJ, in my opinion, is still less likely to play this season, even if he's ahead of Murray in recovery time, just because of that. But I would say that there is still a pretty decent chance that we see both before the playoffs.
Awesome. Okay. Good.
Last question. What does success look like for this Nuggets team in the playoffs? Are there any teams in the West that you think could be a good matchup for them, even if they aren't at full health?
Yeah, I mean, I think success for them is probably they're going to have to make a pretty good showing in at least the second round, given the injury situation. If Murray comes back and he looks closer to Murray than he does to, you know, Murray injured, then obviously that changes things. I think they're a title contender if Murray is able to come back and contribute at a high level. But that's a lot to ask for a guy in his first weeks coming back from ACL. As far as matchups go, it's an interesting question. You know, they're 0-3 versus Memphis, but Memphis's problem is in the half court. Like, they've really struggled this season in terms of being able to handle grinded out possessions. That's where Memphis wants to play chaotic. That's why they match up so well with Golden State. Denver's able to slow the pace down. I think in a playoff environment, Memphis would probably have a hard time over the course of the series with Jokic and the ability to slow that team down and kind of grind it out. I honestly think that the Warriors are not a bad matchup for the Nuggets. The Warriors are a bad matchup for anybody because they've got Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and Draymond Green. But the ability for the Warriors to switch is a little bit negated when you have a guy like Jokic who can punish switches the way that he can. Like, that is a really tough matchup if your entire tactic is we're going to try and switch everything. So, you know, Draymond's really great. And I think Looney's honestly a little underrated, but both of them are going to have a really hard time over the course of a series. Draymond's elite defensively, and he's given Jokic trouble because he's Draymond Green. He's one of the best defensive players ever. But over the course of a series, Jokic probably gets an advantage. I think if they can avoid Phoenix, I think this team legitimately has a chance to actually make the finals. I think Phoenix is the team that Denver, I cannot see a way this season with where they're at for them to be able to beat. But I do think that there is an outside chance for if the Nuggets can catch the breaks that they need for them to make a finals run.
What would you think if they jumped up and ended up in a 5-4 matchup with the Jazz?
I would feel pretty good about Denver in that situation. Utah, you can tell that there's a level of discomfort and anxiety. It's not just the collapse up 3-1 back in the bubble. It's that the Jazz's entire system is geared around Rudy Gobert is going to be the focal point of everything defensively. Mm-hmm. And when you have a player like Jokic, who can win that matchup. It's the, like the it's similar to, but the opposite of with the Warriors, where the Warriors want to switch everything and the Jazz want to play drop. But the problem is like, they're just going to post up Gobert. And as good as Gobert is, and he'll win some of the games, he'll win some of those matchups because Gobert is really good. Jokic ultimately will get the best of him. And when that happens, the defensive structure kind of collapses. Plus, when you have the issues that the Jazz have on the defensive perimeter, when you have the kind of cutters that they have, and the Nuggets are the third best shooting team in the league, which is a little bit surprising even to me. They're the third best team in effective field goal percentage. I would like Denver quite a bit in a matchup versus Utah.
Spring is the best time to add new challenges to your training just in time for summer and warmer days. I know I'm looking outside right now. Sun's out, birds are chirping. It's time to start getting outside. I know that I like to get outside and play basketball with my kids. And honestly, I need to get into a fitness routine in order to keep up with these guys. And Peloton is there for me. Peloton's varying class lengths were designed with your training plan in mind. Personalize your workout, whether you'd like to add a 10-minute core session at the end of your strength class, or take a 60-minute power zone ride to increase your endurance. Peloton classes are designed to help focus on your needs and goals. Peloton's classes were made to challenge you. There are a variety of classes like boot camps, boxing, full body strength, or marathon training, all created to grow your skills or push you to improve in what you're already excelling in. Peloton's program and instruction push you to be your best. Their expert coaches and nonstop vibes will push you to new levels of strength and endurance, keeping you on your toes while giving you the professional coaching you need. Peloton has everything you need to get you where you're going. Whether you prefer to run indoors, row or ride at home, or strength train at the gym, Peloton has something for you. Get your head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill, you might win some, but you just lost one trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
Discover the latest collections from David Yurman, as seen recently, styled on basketball stars like Jaime Jaquez, Jalen Green, D'Angelo Russell, and others. David Yurman is a celebrated American jewelry company inspired by the beauty of art, architecture, and the natural world. The story of David Yurman begins in New York City, with David, a sculptor, and his wife Sybil, a painter and ceramicist. When the artists began collaborating, their goal was to simply make beautiful designed objects to wear. Over 40 years later, the Yurmans and their son, Evan, continue to redefine American luxury jewelry with timeless, modern collections for women and men defined by inspiration, innovation, consummate craftsmanship, and cable, the brand's artistic signature. David Yurman's collections are available on davidyurman.com.
Well, Matt, thank you so much for answering our questions, but it is now time to play Andrew versus the Beat, where each week Andrew goes head-to-head against an NBA beat writer. This week, He's going against Matt Moore, host of the Locked On Nuggets podcast. Matt, how this works, I've come up with 8 questions about the Nuggets. They're all worth 2 points if you get them right, but if you get them wrong, Andrew will have a chance to steal for 1, and we'll go back and forth. So all you have to do is start me out with a number between 1 and 8.
6.
Question number 6. Rank these vets on the Nuggets roster from most playoff games played to fewest playoff games played. Jamichael Green, Austin Rivers, Will Barton. So you're just putting them in order from most playoff games played to fewest playoff games played.
Austin Rivers, Jamichael Green, Will Barton.
That is absolutely correct for 2 points. Great start for Matt Moore. Yes, Rivers has played 55, Green 44, Will Barton 24. All right, Andrew, it's over to you.
Let's go with number 1.
Number 1, I'd hope you'd pick that. The man who
you knew I'd pick it. You knew I would pick number 1.
No, I didn't. Andrew thinks that he says a number and I pick a different question. That's not true. Okay, number 1. The man who performed as the Denver Nuggets mascot Rocky until very recently, perhaps, is the father of the man who performs as Hooper, the mascot for this NBA team, making them the first father-son mascot duo in NBA history. So if you know who Hooper is, Andrew, this would be an easy question.
So I just have to name who Hooper is the mascot for?
Yeah, yeah. Who's he affiliated with?
The Rockets?
No, that would be Clutch the Bear, Andrew, of course.
Oh, dang it.
Matt, do you know?
Is it Orlando?
No, that would... what's his name? He's got a goofy name, the Dragon
Weird
guy.
Yeah,
yeah, the Dragon guy. Yeah. No, it's actually the Detroit Pistons.
Oh, there we go. Detroit the Pistons. Problem for me is I just watched the Aaron Gordon. I watched the Aaron Gordon video of him dunking over the Orlando ones.
That
you say mascot, and that one's in my brain.
Yes, I was at a party for the dunk contest, and no one else was interested in it except me. And so afterwards, I felt like I needed to do something, so we played the 2016 dunk contest on the screen to make everyone feel better. Okay, Matt, it is your turn.
I'll go 4.
Question number 4. As a 3-man lineup, Jokic, Will Barton, Monty Morris has the highest net rating, +13.3, in the league among 3-man lineups that have played at least 1,000 minutes together. If we expand it to 800 minutes played together, there is only one superior 3-man lineup from the Boston Celtics. Who are the Celtics in that 3-man lineup, which currently has a +13.8 net rating?
Tatum, Brown, Smart.
That is incorrect. Andrew, you have a chance to steal.
Tatum, Smart, Time Lord.
Andrew, that is correct for a point. Yes. All right, and it's back to you. You're only down 1 now.
Number 2.
Question number 2. Nikola Jokic's PER this season is 32.6. The next highest on the Nuggets is Aaron Gordon at 15.4. That's a difference of 17.2, which is the largest gap in PER between the first and second best player on a team in at least the last 40 years. That's when I stopped. In fact, the last time we had a PER gap greater than 15 was in the 1993-94 season when the scoring champ posted a 30.7 PER, while his best teammate posted a 15.3. That scoring champ would go on to win the MVP the following season. Name that player. So I've given you some hints about this person.
Hakeem?
Hakeem! That is incorrect. Matt, you have a chance to steal. So this was the scoring champ in 93-94, MVP the following season.
Yeah, I'll have it. David Robinson is my answer, but that's not it. It's 94.
Actually, that is absolutely correct. It was David Robinson.
Me.
Yes. Well, now you got me guessing.
I thought Elijah Wan toasting him in the playoffs was in 94, but I guess it was 95.
Let me look.
I remembered it after I said Elijah Wan, where I was thinking, oh man, that's like the story is.
Yeah.
Elijah Wan being mad about not getting
the MVP.
Yeah, that is correct. 94-95 MVP on Basketball Reference. Great down, job. John. And Matt, it's your board. And now you're up back by 2.
8.
Question number 8. There's a question here that I know Matt's going to get, and so I'm waiting to see if he picks it. This one, we'll see. In the 2005 first round series against the San Antonio Spurs, there were 2 Denver Nuggets who had a 30-point game. Name those players, and for this one, you get 1 point per correct answer.
Carmelo Anthony.
That is incorrect.
You kidding?
Not kidding. Andrew, can you name two Nuggets from the 2005 Nuggets team?
That scored how many points?
They scored 30 points. They had a 30-point game in the first round series against the Spurs.
Oh, boy. Kenyon Martin?
Kenyon Martin, another great guess. Also incorrect. The two correct answers, Andre Miller and Earl Boykins. Andrew, your favorite.
I'm looking at an Earl Boykins jersey right now, right to the right
Should
of me.
Should be embarrassed,
That's so
Andrew.
Sad that I didn't get... I'm fully embarrassed.
All right, Andrew, you can tie it up here if you get this right.
Number three.
Question number three. In discussing his MVP candidacy, much has been made about Jokic's performance in various advanced metrics. In which of the following advanced metrics does Jokic not rank first? So I'm going to give you five advanced metrics. He only doesn't rank first in one of them, and you just have to tell me which one it is. Raptor, Darko, BPM, LeBron, or EPM? So we got the BPM, box plus minus, EPM, estimated plus minus. Raptor, Darko, BPM, LeBron, EPM.
I guess I'll guess Darko. I don't know.
Andrew, that's absolutely correct. It is Darko. Giannis is currently first in that metric, but it's Jokic and all the other ones. Okay, we have a tied game going into the final two questions. And Matt, it is your board.
Let's go five.
Question number five. Jeff Green is still going strong in his 14th NBA season. During his career, Green has played for 11 other NBA teams in addition to the Nuggets, and we're going to name them all. Now, how this works, Matt, you will give me a name, then Andrew will give me a name. We'll go back and forth until one of you stumbles.
Memphis Grizzlies.
That is correct. Andrew.
Oklahoma City Thunder.
Also correct. Back to Matt.
Brooklyn Nets.
Correct. Back to Andrew.
Does the former Thunder team count as a team?
Yes, it does.
Seattle Supersonics.
That is correct. Back to Matt.
Utah Jazz.
Correct. Back to Andrew.
Cavs.
Yes. Back to Matt. So many teams.
So many. So many teams.
Half the league. Arguably.
I can picture him in every uniform, it feels like.
Yeah, that's what it feels like.
You can picture him in every single one.
Yeah.
And just quick recap, we've done Seattle, OKC, Memphis, Cleveland, Utah, and Brooklyn.
Oh, Boston.
Boston. That is correct. Back to Andrew.
Houston.
Houston, that is correct. We are to the final three Jeff Green teams.
So many teams. Okay.
There's still three.
I think I've got one more. I've got one more. I don't know that I can remember the other two.
I'll do Atlanta Hawks.
Atlanta Hawks, that is incorrect. Andrew, what was the other one you were thinking?
Wizards.
He did play for the Wiz. And the other two, the Orlando Magic. Do you remember that ever?
I don't remember that at all.
And the Los Angeles Clippers. It's also on that team. Apparently.
What year was he on the Clippers? I don't remember that either.
Yeah, I didn't remember a lot of these. Let's see. He was on the Clippers in 2015-2016 season. He played 27 games for the Clips. That was after Memphis, so he was traded from Memphis to the Clippers. Oh, wasn't that when they gave up like a first? Doc gave up a first for him?
Yeah, that was. That's right. Yeah, that's right.
Yes.
Okay, Andrew, you could end it right here because you get the final question. You got to get it right, though. According to Rivals.com, how many players on the Nuggets roster were top five recruits in their high school class?
Two.
That is incorrect. Matt, you have a chance to steal. You could win the week. Well, actually, you would tie. It is three. I will let you win the week if you can name all three.
Okay. Aaron Gordon, Austin Rivers, Jamal Murray.
That is incorrect. You got two of them, though, so we end in a tie. It was.
I'm glad it's
MPJ.
I'm happy with a tie.
It was MPJ, although as I was reading the question, I was like, well, DeMarcus Cousins was top five recruit. But he's technically not on the team. until he signs that next contract. So, three was the correct answer.
Who are the other two?
Austin Rivers, Aaron Gordon. That was correct. And then MPJ. Jamal was 10. And then there was one other guy who was... Was it Will Barton? I think Will Barton was 11.
Yeah.
Nationally his year.
That would make sense. Yeah. That would make sense.
I was just like, oh, it's got to be Jamal. He went to Kentucky. So, yeah, it has to
right.
be.
Right. Well, that was a thrilling tie.
Yeah. Matt, thanks so much for coming on the show. Go check out the Locked On Nuggets podcast. Go check out the Action Network. And go follow Matt on Twitter at HB Basketball. Matt, thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, thank you to Matt Moore. It is now time to pick a new favorite team, Andrew. And we still have, 24 teams left. We're on the second spin of the wheel. Still got a lot of fun teams on here. Anyone in particular you'd like to watch this week? You can put it out to the wheel gods.
You know, now that we have Ja Morant, who didn't get hurt last night, I'd like to watch more Grizzlies. I'm already watching Grizzlies.
Hey, and I wouldn't mind watching the team they played last night, the Minnesota Timberwolves. So let's spin that wheel.
Yeah.
See what we get. Next week's Wheel of Fandom team will be... Phoenix Suns.
Phoenix Suns. We just talked about the Suns.
We just did our prep work.
I just saw them in person, too. So, all right. We get to see. We get to actually follow your exact storylines. I think you already have everything written for next week.
Hell yes.
for the next week's show. So tune in next week. Thank you guys so much for listening. If you guys will leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, we will read it on the show. And we have two today. This first one is from Trevor in Zimbabwe, who says, I love all the podcasts, especially Saturday Slam and Jam with Andrew Schlecht and Alex Spears. They make it easy to understand basketball at a higher level without being too nerdy, especially for a casual NBA fan from Zimbabwe like myself. Thank you so much, Trevor, for that review. And our last one is from Sean in Kansas City. He says, please tell me Alex's game show host voice on the Saturday Slam and Jam is just his actual voice. Thanks for making my weekends much more enjoyable, Andrew and Alex. Can you confirm or deny that it's your actual voice?
Yep, that's how I talk to my family 24/7. They hate it.
Oh, thank you guys so much for listening to the Saturday Slam and Jam podcast. Be sure to tune in to all the shows on the Athletic NBA show next week. Basketball Buds will be airing on Monday, as well as the Daily Ding, so be sure to tune in to those. Enjoy your weekend, and we will talk to you guys again next week.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.